C7. Number 1B.
In that sense that Moses gave to the children of Israel, naturally was already adumbrated the highest sense of monotheism, because he already began to show first that there should be one God, though it was only the God of Israel, but that that one God actually was the God that would speak and it will be done. And God said, and it will be done. So that there is already there something there that says that God and the will of God, that God and the manifestation of God is one. And God said, and it will be done. It was also already an invisible God. Nobody could see God. He was hidden away somewhere, dwelling on a high place, dwelling on a Mount Horeb. Nobody could see him, or he was hidden away in the tabernacle or in the Holy of Holies, and nobody were allowed to go into the Holy of Holies except the high priest once a year. So already one could see that monotheistic God was a kind of a spiritual God, not a material deity. But when one considers actually what kind of a God he was he actually the one and the only thing in being? Then one could see, no. That God was only one God, but next to that God was a whole creation that was not his realm. Because the God of Israel, the God of Moses, was a God of a covenant. And in a covenant, you have two parties. The moment you have two, you have dualism. So innate in that sense of the monotheistic God of Moses was already a sense that there exists a dualistic nature in being, that God was a one partner and Israel the other partner, and they had to see how they were bargaining properly with each other, that each one was doing his job, each one depending on the other one. God would only act if Israel would act rightly. Therefore, Israel had to do certain things and so as that God would do certain things. And you can see that somehow God was not the God of the universe, the God of all. He was just a God of a center, but the circumference was Israel, and Israel could really do what they wanted to do. And only if they would obey the commands of God, then God would be their God. Else he wouldn't be their God. So we had right from the beginning of Noah on, we had the covenant God. And the covenant is a two-party God. It was a bargaining God. And so only if Israel was faithful to God, God would do what be also faithful to Israel. God would not always have his own nature, just one nature, and be faithful. God would only be faithful to Israel if Israel was faithful to God. And so God could lose his nature and change his nature. He had a dualistic nature within himself. Then we come to the second side of the city, to the Christ, when somehow in the prophetic era of the Old Testament, a new concept was precipitating itself upon the consciousness of the prophets and of Israel, which was one step further in the development of a purely monotheistic concept of God. God was now he who came to Israel. He is now that who said, and the Spirit of God came upon so and so and so. that the prophets would start out and saying, the Spirit of God came upon me. Well, the moment you have a sense that he came, you accept that he wasn't there before. That there is a realm where God is not the only one, but that he can come to that other realm. So the churches always will start out, and the Spirit of God came upon me, and then they would act according to the will of God. So we have the sense that therefore the proposition was that there is duality, the Spirit of God, and on the other hand, people, a nation that did not have the Spirit of God, but the Christ would now come and say, oh yes, now I can see that that God, which is the one God, has a Christ and can come to Israel in his own nature as God. That God of the prophets was a God that would always call Israel, return to the Lord. Again, you can see that the monotheistic God was actually not a monistic God, that it was a God that would call, so to say, Israel and to say, come back into the oneness of God. Return to the Lord, which is the Christ impact on Israel. Or, again, that sense of transmission, we encounter here now the God that is the giver of all good. He does not only say, I am the only God, thou shalt have no other gods behind me, but that God has now a Christ, which is good, and says, I am now the giver of all good. The psalmist says, bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. Forget not all his benefits. He was showing that God was the giver of all benefits. Israel was the receiver of all benefits. The moment you have a giver and a receiver, you have duality. We have two parties again, but here, in a higher way than in Moses' time, you have already the giver and the receiver. The later prophets, like Isaiah, they already then began to see somehow that this monotheistic God should really be the only God in the whole world, not only the only God in Israel. They began now to see that the other gods, the gods of the Assyrians and Egyptians and so on, were actually not gods. And so they preached or prophesied to the people, you know, the Deutero Isaiah is just full of it. For instance, he says, I am the Lord, and there is none else. See, there is none else. It's no more like in Moses, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt have no other gods beside me. He says, I am the Lord, and there is none else. And you can see the idea of monotheism becomes purer and more exclusive and more exclusive. There is no God beside me. Or he says, I am the first and the last. And besides me, there is no God. And so little by little they began to establish the sense that there is actually only one God in the whole world. The God of hosts, as they called him in the 4,000 year period. Sabaoth, which was the Lord of hosts. Then we come to the third side of the city, or to Christianity, and with that to the New Testament. And there, the sense of oneness changes again, and it has actually that sense of Christianity, of true relationship, between the Creator and creation, trying to show that there is not a duality between the Creator and its creation, but introducing slowly the sense that Creator and creation is of the same nature and not of a dualistic opposing nature. It is actually that father-son relationship which we get here, where the son is the heir of the father first, where Jesus said, all that what is mine is thine, see, where the duality is broken down, that there is an entity called God and an entity called man, where now the unity of God and man is brought out closer in saying what belongs to me belongs to you. Therefore, there is only one possession, one belonging to. Where Jesus began to introduce that God is not outside of you, because in the Old Testament we know that they always stood face to face to God. Can you see the dualistic sense? You are outside of God, and you are face to face to God, you see, and bringing out in this way the two partnership, whereas Jesus slowly began to introduce that there are not two partners involved in being, that the kingdom of God is now within you, you see. So through the relationship of Creator and creation as one, slowly the idea was evolving that God is within us and not outside of us, that we are not standing face to face to God, that we are related to it, or like Paul would then point it out and say, for it is God that worketh in you, that worketh in you, is now no more working up on Mount Horeb, hidden away somewhere in the clouds, is now working in you. Both, and that's very wonderful to see how he pointed it out now, I think for the first time, like Jesus, both to will and to do of his good pleasure. He began to see that God is now not only the will to do it, I will come to Israel, but that he is also doing in man God's will. It's no more like in the Old Testament, I'm going to do something, that God says, I'm going to do something to you, Israel, if you are going to do something to me. Now God says, I'm going to do something in you, I want to do it, and I do it. I do it myself. You don't have to do it. I'm the worker in you. I'm the one that is the will and the doing of that will. You hear how step by step the idea of oneness gets closer and closer until Jesus could say, I in you and you in me again. Those two parties come closer and closer. Now it's not only God in man, now it's also I in you, you in me. And so the whole realm of the spiritual idea becomes a kind of oneness. If we go further in the Bible and then come really to that scientific thinker in the Bible, practically the first and only one in the Bible who was touching science, namely John the Revelator, who wrote both the epistles of John and who wrote under the dictates of Jesus the revelation of John. He finally put the whole thing together and said, I and my Father are one. He not only said, God will work in me, the kingdom of God is in me, he put it right together very closely, very tightly as coexistence, and says, I and the Father are one. I don't know Hebrew enough, but I have read that actually the translation should be I and Father is one in quantity. It's not so much my Father and my Father, but just I and Father is one. It's the same thing, what they wanted to bring out. They say that my is actually not in the Greek version. They say that the term one there is a neuter noun indicating quantity and not quality. Not quality, quantity is one and the same thing. So when really Jesus was pronouncing that he was the Son of God, that I and the Father is one, that they stoned him. That was too much. But that's the point where we should pick it up, and where Christian Science, as a science, should pick it up and see that God and man should be considered as one thing, and then let Mrs. Eddy translate that out of a mystical language of God and man and translate it into the scientific language of principle and idea is one and the same thing. So that would be tracing the idea of monotheism through the Bible, just bringing out that actually in our consciousness we should be aware of how step by step the closeness, the oneness of God and man has been worked out step by step. And I would say it's a very good exercise for us to just think out those four great stages, because one could see that perhaps we are suffering under the same dualistic sense as had to be met through the biblical teaching. That we too, only too often feel we are an identity, or something that is separate from God, but still we say, yes, there is somewhere, somehow, there is an unknown, unseen God. We acknowledge that one God, we acknowledge that there is a God, but who am I? I'm somewhere outside of that one God, and I somehow have to draw near to that one God. So we come to a further point which I want to discuss, point three. We take up point three, the development from 1866 until today. The development from 1866 until today. I want to trace the idea of oneness and monotheism through the Christian Science history as a special part, and see that Christian scientists did not see the oneness of being right away, right from the start, though Mrs. Eddy would present the oneness of being right from the start, but perhaps she herself had difficulty in wording it, in expressing it in a language that was unmistakable. And naturally, she had to deal with an unprepared thought as students, and these students only slowly really could get away from a dualistic sense of being, and only step by step began to see something purer about the oneness of being. You know that for Mrs. Eddy, the point of revelation in 1866 was a revelation where she just could see the oneness of being as a terrific influx of light, which would discard all sense of dualism, all sense of having to strive against something. Though afterwards she was very hot about handling animal magnetism as if it were something that has to be taken very serious. She makes that statement about her discovery when she says, in 1866 I awoke from the dream of spirit in the flesh. That was the dualistic sense, spirit in the flesh, mixing of opposites. I awoke from that dream. So far as to take the side of spirit. Spirit we know as a synonymous term for God, which says God is the one and only. So as to take the side of spirit and strive to cease my warfare. So she describes her experience, among others, you know, that she began to see life in and of spirit, namely where she began to see that there is only one, that there is no opposite, that there is nothing to fight against, that there is no accusers there. Therefore, to strive, to cease my warfare. Still, she was striving to cease her warfare. She hasn't quite overcome that warfare yet. But she could see where the solution would lie, namely to have just the one and only spirit which knows no opposite. That her whole concept of the one was at the beginning not so definite as it was later. We must not think that just in 1 second in 1866 the whole science of being was revealed to her. She only could see the big light and the indefinite outlines of the discovery. And you know that she says that it took her quite a long time, many months, until she finally could say that she found out that all is mind. She went through a very hard period of striving and seeking, is actually that which I have seen at that moment of my recovery, is that really a science, is that really fact, or is it just an illusion, is it just a psychological experience? She was not so fully convinced right then, in February of that year, that she had seen the answer. And when you read the history of her, you can see that it took her about 6 or 9 months, I don't know now quite well, until in the latter part of that year, I think that's the way she puts it, that she began to see that all is mind. So again, we have a sense that there is a development taking place in each individual to think out that whole subject of oneness. I like to state that because I like that each student doesn't feel that because we talk so much about the oneness of being and there is only one being, that we feel this is quite enough to know. This is not enough to know. We have to see all the hidden ways and means how the dualistic sense would like to enter in, and that without we are aware of that dualistic sense, we really are subject to that dualistic consciousness and dualistic approach. We have to be consciously aware of the many aspects of dualism so as really to counteract it through a specified, differentiated sense of oneness. So, in seeing this, Mrs. Eddy naturally had a big sense of oneness. She could finally see, just to take that first, and then we will see how the field was working it out, but she herself worked it out and could finally see that there is only a one, that one was now infinite, not just a one, not an amorphous one, but that it was an infinite one. That infinite didn't mean infinite in time and space. That infinite meant infinite individuality, therefore infinite diversification, so that there is an infinite diversification of the aspect of oneness, not just a number one aspect of oneness, but an infinitely diversified and individualized aspect of what constitutes oneness. That further she could see that this sense of oneness could be put into a science, so that these various aspects of oneness would constitute a consistent web of oneness. And that's what we want to do until the end of the week, to show this consistent web of oneness as a matrix of oneness. And naturally she could see that this oneness would, so to say, rely on the fact that all is ideas and not matter, that we don't have to do with the opposite pair of ideas and matter. There is only one reality, ideas. And that, therefore, within that oneness would exist the whole calculus of ideas, not just one computation, but an infinite calculus of ideas. Only that would be oneness, infinite oneness. Therefore, that all that there was going on in being was just God and his infinite ideas going on. That's another aspect of oneness, the operational sense of oneness. That we don't have to operate being, but being alone is the one and the only operator of itself, and therefore that is that infinite operation of the one being going on. And in this way, really constitute the only realm of reality, that the realm of reality is the realm of the principle and idea is one and the same thing. That was, in a short description, her sense of oneness that she had right from the beginning. And now, the problem arose, could the students see that right away? And she naturally found out that the students were not able to receive her teaching in its whole magnitude, but that the students had to go through a long-drawn development where they step by step could draw nearer to that sense of oneness. And that's what I want to discuss after a break. We make a break here.